We had to have some fun in the English language. There's 6,121 words which start with "an." "An" particle is the 6,121st line.
Counting those.
So, yeah,
if unparticles are so similar to particles, as unlandsberg similar to Landsberg.
Yeah, I actually thought that John Landsberg would make my better joke, but he didn't use it. So, let me tell you what the sort of, things I want to bring up as an experimentalist about the unparticles understanding of this phenomenon. So there are a couple of experimental issues I see, and one is that, as you saw from Jonathan's talk yesterday and some of John's talk today, many signatures for unparticle are similar to signatures for extra dimensions of some kind, and it's not really accidental because, as John showed you today, certain models are actually isomorphic to, say, Randall-Sundrum model. And in general, essentially they call the case of number of extra dimensions which is non-integer. It's under between 1 and 2, which is exactly the space covered between the Randall-Sundrum model, where it's one extra dimension of certain kind, and the ABD models, where the number of extra dimensions is 2 or more. So it's not really unexpected that one of the signatures which people have explored so far, phenomenologically at least, are similar to the ones explored for extra dimensions, which makes the theoretical work quite easy because essentially a well-defined operator which looks similar to the operators of virtual graviton exchange and direct graviton production, and then you will run them against the data which has been already analyzed in similar framework for the presence of extra dimensions. That's why E plus and minus L3 in particular gives this thing this limit right now by the monopoles. So the experimental issues, however, if you want to pursue this phenomena at the LHC, is you still need some ways of putting these things in the generators. And one question which is immediate to me is whether the large extra dimension generators and Randall-Sundrum generators such as heard it and partially did that, could be immediately used to generate these phenomena instead of using model parameters for ABD ORS model, use the lambda U and the dimensionality of this conformal theory, DU. So this is something the phenomenologist would help answering. Personally, looking at the Feynman rule, I don't see why it wouldn't be possible, but I don't know about the details such as ultraviolet divergence, for example, when you sum over the virtual states with unparticles and how they handle it on the cutoff of the sum if there is ultraviolet divergence. So it seems to me that there are a couple of theoretical issues and logical issues which need to be addressed, and then somebody should actually put this in the code by modifying one of the event generators that will allow us to make particular predictions for the LHC, for the LHC case. The other thing I want to bring up is the signature monogens and monophorons, which has been claimed as one of the possible signatures for the unparticles, very similar to the large extra dimensions. And here there are a number of instrumental issues and experimental issues which has been looked by many people, both in context of the LHC and in the context of the Trevithan experiment. And particularly important issue is understanding of missing details, because most these signatures rely on absolutely great capability of detector to reconstruct the missing transverse energy. And this capability can be easily handicapped by any malfunction in the detector. Missing ET is very non-robust variable against instrumental effects, against cracks in the detector, against cosmic rays, and it probably won't be that much of a problem for the LHC because of the detectors being deep underground and also a very short bunch crossing compared to, say, the Trevithan experiment. Nevertheless, both calibrations clearly spend a lot of time on understanding these non-Gaussian missing details. I should probably mention that looking at the typical cross section for the unparticle conduction of the shape of the distribution in the sinky T, it doesn't seem to me that the resolution of the sinky T would play any role in this. You're really talking about much higher cuts than typical cuts on the resolution, by the resolution. So in terms of triggering on these events or analyzing these events, it's really not an issue, and the issue is that we avoid the instrumental effects which might mock up something which looks like the large X dimensions or composite signal or the unparticles. For the virtual exchanges, on the other hand, we know from the experience of the Pavitron and LAMP that this is a very clear signature because you can look for left hand pair of photons. They typically carry very little background and they're very easy to trigger on. And one thing which I was pondering on is how to distinguish the unparticle signal from, say, generic composite signal or large extra-dimensional signal in case you see some depression of cross-section or enhancement of the cross-section in the virtual changes by looking at very young dipolar production. And one way of doing this hasn't been really spelled out in Kingler's paper, but you could figure it out very easily, because if you look at the sort of generic compositeness for fermion operator, which has compositeness K lambda, that's how it is, and then this is the sum of the left-handed and right-handed helicities. On the other hand, you can compare this with the typical operator you get from unparticle lambda is the scale of the field theory and the momentum of the particle, and du is the dimensionality of this of the unparticles. And if you compare this expression essentially with the compositeness expression, it would be the sum of the Dirac matrices and so forth, but you could see that essentially there is a residual dependence on the energy in case of the unparticles, whereas things could be just parameterized as 1 over lambda squared or 5 over lambda squared for the generic composite signal. So that gives you some dynamic range, and you could actually try to explore different energy dependence of the unparticle operators compared to the standard composites for fermion operator. I'm not sure if people actually look at this in any detail, and it's not clear to me what ranges of lambda you could probe by doing this, because you always suppress yourself by ratio T to lambda, and one has to really do some simulations to understand whether the following distributions due to the following quantum distribution function might mask this effect if you don't have enough dynamic range of the LHC to distinguish between the two. But it seems to me that given that this signature is really a rather clean signature, it's a discovery mode. You know that historically dileptons and dipolars were a very fruitful ground for discoveries. James Z particles were all discovered in this mode. We could expect actually rather early hint for new physics in the dilepton or dipolar channel. And it would be nice to have some theoretical groundwork to be able to distinguish between various signals which give you a compositeness looking operator in this certain debate. So these are experimental issues I see. On the other hand, I see a number of other issues. They are well-defined operators. They're easy to calculate. You know, based on the original paper, you already have nice Python-level simulations, cross-sections, and so forth. And seems like this is a particularly dipolar cross-section of the LHC for various scheme of these unparticles. You see the typical enhancement which you expect in composite from composites like operators, Ohm published nice paper for resonances in case of the mass screen for these unparticles. Again, this is something very familiar with experimentalists who work on Randall Sandman gravitons, generic excitations in the model, this key inverse key extra dimensions. So this is really a nice signature to look for, and all we need is essentially incorporation of these partner level calculations into realistic interfacing is more than just kind of lying to them. Simulation packages that you speak in early and really speak to detector anyway. So it seems to me by looking at these plots and just looking at the whole landscape of these type of signatures that many of these studies can be really bootstrapped from generic searches for S2-dimensions. You don't really need much if you have an analysis for S2-dimensions. It just runs like the different Monte Carlo and re-express your limits or your hint of discovery in terms of different parameter space, but certain things like distinguishing between the models seems to be a nice sandbox for experimentalists and phenomenologists to play when you actually have data. Triggering doesn't seem to be an issue either, because you always have in the compositors like operators, which are suppressed by some high power of lambda squared, lambda to the force, this is intrinsically high energy phenomenon. So the only way for you to see non-zero deviation from the standard model is to go high in energy, which this plot pretty much illustrates very well. And therefore, you're talking about the photons or jets or pair of objects with the typical energies in hundreds of eV. So triggering on these objects doesn't seem to be a problem at all. So you definitely would get that on tape. So this, I don't think, would be really challenging in terms of experimental conditions and ability to understand these events. However, it seems to be interesting to look at some signatures which are not so bread and butter, and that we heard about two possibilities. So John spent a lot of time on finding moving jets, and this is something one could explore with enough theoretical guidance on how these puppy jets might look like, and exactly how to distinguish between them. I should say that actually looking for fat jets or funny looking jets is a big business plan, you see now, for a particularly different reason. There's a certain class of models, again, as the dimensional models, which predict resonances in multi-TV scale, which are coupled mainly to the top quarks, which means that these resonances typically decay in TC bars here. However, each of the top quarks will carry about a TeV or a couple TeV of energy, which means that then this top quark decays in a W and B jet, and W subsequently decays into jets. These three jets are so narrowly collimated that you cannot reconstruct them as three jets. You see them as a monojet, which have slightly different shape, because in general it's more puffy, more fatty than the standard quark of blue and jet. So there is a big business in trying to figure out how to deal with jets. It's not really the triggering issue, it's the issue of uncovering the signal from very large QCD background, which comes from regular die jets. And some ideas which people were talking about is to run KT algorithms with the varying KT parameter D on these jets. So you first find jets in the detector, then you surround jets with some large enough pole and run KT algorithms for many different parameters, and you see how many subclusters you get as a function of this running parameter Z. And basically, you try to build templates on how the top quark would look like as opposed to the quark jet. This is much more powerful technique than using the so-called jet mass, because jet mass is not really well-defined quantity in collider physics. First of all, it's a measure of granularity of the detector, of the calorimeter, not just the mass of the new object. Second of all, it might be very sensitive to things like underlying pileup events. And recently, Uli Bauer and Winhorn showed actually jet mass is a strong function of what type of algorithm you're using. The Cohn algorithm, it turns out to be unstable. For KT algorithms, better behave. And that's another reason why one would like to use KT algorithms to try to see the substructure of these jets. Yes, see?
What if you use a KT algorithm, something that's a mass type algorithm with the tracks instead of the time?
You probably could, but then you lose the neutral component of the.
I mean, you wouldn't get the exact mass, but you would see if there's
right.
Something funny with the distribution.
Or you have particle flow.
Yeah, particle flow would be the ultimate way of looking at this, but basically, KT algorithm is variable parameter, is whose mass particle flow. The problem with particle flow, it takes years to actually design the working particle flow. It's still taking, we don't have particle flow algorithm working in CMS or Monte Carlo yet. We are successful in some aspects. We can identify tails within the GF very well, but identifying every single particle, cadence, lambdas, and so forth, it is quite a challenging job, especially in the presence of material in the detector. So there's a lot of quite experienced people working on this, but I don't think it's day one or even day three for this. It takes quite some time, you know, plus minus gliders. But KT is something which may be sort of more quick and dirty in things. So I agree that probably particle flow would be ultimately the way to look for this.
Yeah, if you run with a small enough D parameter for the KT algorithm, you're more likely to break up your jet.
Exactly.
So.
So what I would do, I would just run this variable parameter and see multiples of the subclusters as a function of parameter and try to build templates with people that the things like boosted top or these funny jets of John's would look very different from either gluon jets or quark jets. But some of these studies have been started at Lesouche this summer, but yeah. Now that's partially right, but I don't think the determination of position is any problem, because the calorimeter, even for puffy jets, would have well-defined center of gravity. I don't think that,
you know. If you want to measure substructure, you want to know much more than that.
Right. Yeah. But the question is not about, you know, we know what top mass is. We're not trying to measure top mass from this jet. We're trying to distinguish this jet from spurious QCD background. You need to suppress QCD background by 6 or 8 orders of magnitude, which is 4 or 3 orders of magnitude per jet. And that's a, you know, maybe unsurmountable task. So any little bit helps. And people so far look at the jet mass, both calculated from tracks and calculated from calorimeter cells, and they didn't see good enough separation from QCD background, because QCD background has a large tail. So it's one particle each sort of, you know, is spray from the core of the jet, affects the mass quite tremendously because of the fixed ground loads of the calorimeter. So all I'm saying is that the current state-of-the-art ideas coming from experimentalists and technologists is that something like KT algorithms might work better, and I think that's actually this would be an excellent test case if you could somehow suggest what would be the difference between this funny jet, this partial radiation from the CFT and particles compared to the gluon or quark jet. So that would be a nice sort of toy study, which could be put in a bigger framework of rather important class of models in which you have heavy boosted particles which would like resolve. So I see quite a lot of synergy with the other types of maybe less unexpected signatures which people are studying for the LHT. Yeah, finally, this other idea from Jonathan and collaborators, which we discussed yesterday, is that you might not actually pay large extra factors for adding extra legs to these final state diagrams, because you're dealing with really strongly coupled operators of the size of 1. So that means that if you say look at production of photons, diphotons versus 3, 4, 5 and so forth photons in such events, the ratio of events with 2 photons to 3 photons will be very different from what you expect from QCD. And normally, if you take the generic high PT event, you could look at the ratio of K gamma versus K jet. And we know that from QCD, this ratio is of the order of 10^3 K. So you pay roughly factor 1,000 for photon versus jet. That's basically alpha squared, alpha S squared divided by alpha M squared. And however, for unparticles, you would expect this ratio to be 10^(alpha K), where alpha is probably much less than 1 or less than 1. So it seems that just by looking at this very generic ratio, which you sort of
it's self-calibratable in the sense that, that you move, as a function of multiplicity, you integrate over various PT distributions, so you could say calculate the ratio as a function of minimum PT of a photon or a jet. And you would see a very different behavior for the QCD or something which either has this type of behavior or generic signatures with quantum gravity or coupling to a photon and coupling to a fermion, say quark, is very different. The ratio of this coupling is very different from the ratio of this coupling in the standard model. So this kind of search, very generic search, where you pick the high PT events and just look at the ratio of particles, where photons could be electrons or muons as well, might be actually very early warning for physics like production of black holes or string balls or non-QCD fireballs, I should say, generically, such as these phenomena. So I think that would be interesting logical and semi-experimental study to look at.
So you're saying that because somehow you think that that ratio is under better theoretical control.
Yeah, because you don't care about PDFs and the ratio. Many uncertainties will cancel the ratio, so there's still different slope for QCD dipole M photons and QCD M jets, but that's a secondary order effect. Presumably you would see some slope, and then at some point the slope changes if you see this effect. Because all these effects are sort of threshold-like effects. The black holes, these type of effects are threshold-like effects, because you have to cross the threshold of certain kind to produce this phenomena. So you would expect that if you look at this ratio, it looks more or less smoothly falling, smoothly behaving, and then at some point, at some minimum PT or the photon or jet, you start seeing the deviation. That would be, say, flattening of this ratio. That would be quite dramatic signature, I think, which is very hard to fake, so sort of the Kepler effects and whatnot. So I think, well, in general, we know that ratios are much more stable than individual measurements, and therefore, I think that might be a good early type of measurement. And then, if you see some effect, you can go and study it in more detail and try to figure out what exactly is going on by looking at, say, ratio of photons to electrons and so forth. Try to resolve carrier masses of objects to see if there's some resonance production. More like a fireball thing. So these are sort of, you know, third experimental lesson I think I'm able to carry out of the discussion and the papers which I have looked at. But nevertheless, I don't think John mentioned this. I must say that I'm really personally unimpressed by particles, but that's my personal bias. And none of us are particularly unbiased, especially when it comes to unparticles, you like them or hate them. I don't see very compelling reasons to introduce this thing for solution of the problems we have, although John might be working in the direction of making it more interesting. The other thing which I find interesting, there was a nice paper by Matthias Neuberth about 3 or 4 months ago, where he actually started looking at the at these unparticles and figured out that they look pretty much like DFKL evolution. So the bottom line that it might be just the very bread and butter physics, which has nothing to do with, you know, any electric symmetry breaking or deficiency of the standard model. It could be just essentially the evolution of strong coupling to a weakly coupled regime. DFKL is one of these examples where you start with something non-conformal, asymptotically you get conformal, conformal looking QFT. So in this sense, I would say that it's interesting to look at that, and it seems to me that in most of the cases you don't need to do much extra work compared to what we are going to look for anyway. So why not? We could kill yet another hypothesis before the number of citations would exceed the number of English words which start with IUN. But on the other hand, I don't think it would be an ultimately running if nature is so ugly.
Does that opinion apply to every topic that's been discussed at this
discussion? No, people should really exercise good taste, and some people, different people have different taste.
Yeah,
I think there are more compelling things to look for, but that
we certainly shouldn't be, I mean, what I think is important, and that's part of discussions in this workshop, that no matter what we do, we have to be very careful not to throw the baby with the water. And it's good to see this kind, you know, out of that signatures, which come from, you know, latest quirks of theoretical thinking, or some other ideas. This is not particularly latest quirk. This phenomenon has been known since the 70s, so it's really nothing particularly new about that. But it's interesting to see whether, you know, whether we could easily recycle our existing approaches, existing searches, to just enhance the theoretical phase space which we can probe, and that pretty much goes along the signature approach, which both Tevatron calculations have been leaning forward, which Henry mentioned several times in his remarks. And it just seems to me that this, the amount of particular models going for model after model is not the right approach. We really have to think in probing the whole classes of models, and I think people in this room realize it pretty well, and that's what we are moving forward.
I guess I just asked because it seems to me what, you know, the traditional idea of judging what to work on is the idea of just, you know, is it motivated, is it something you think is real world, whereas now we're moving to judging things based on the value is how much do they give us the exotic signals that we wouldn't have thought of otherwise. I think it's valid.
No,
no one's going to claim it.
And this particular type of thing, yeah, it's, I mean, it's a cute signature. If you see something like that, you know, it's nice to have it on the back of your mind. And as I said, there's a good synergy of, as we discussed in all these models, many of the features are common to completely different classes of models. So if anything, we're sort of proving a theorem that looking for signatures is actually much more dramatic way of finding the new physics. We really need to cast very broad nets and not move under the particular lampposts, because I think we, you know, that was the 20th century physics here, unfortunately. We're a little bit beyond that at this point. Yes?
I'm used to hearing your point of view, given that you're well known for work on black holes.
Yeah. Yeah, as I said, you have to exercise something.
Yes, yeah. Okay. Well, but I think it's important to keep in mind, I think probably most of the theorists here would agree, certainly the ones I've talked to, that there's no particular model in this class in which there's particularly strong motivation. But it's also important to keep in mind that, first of all, aside from the fact that the theorists are often wrong about what's motivating, there are many contexts in which these sectors are leftovers from something that is motivated. So I really don't think one should take this point of view, especially, for example, if you think extra dimensions are similar, a leftover from that extra dimension, which is some growth, which mimics this physics, or gives you any one of these combinations of physics and software, is very light.
No, but now you are saying the same thing I'm saying. I'm saying that it's nice to see that there are many commonality between models which come from completely different ideas, and it seems to me that the common denominator is the final state. So what we should be doing as experimentalists and phenomenologists are identifying the most promising final states, and of course, you know, sheer count of models which end up in this final state is probably not the right metric here, but at least we should be able to concentrate on those we know of, and if we cover all we know of, there's some chance we will cover, that we'll learn how to cover things we might not have thought about better. And in fact, when you see these new ideas which come in, you know, every half a year, it is pleasing to see that experimentally they rarely give you unsurmountable new signatures. So you might not be covering them particularly efficient. You know, tuning your figure might help you tuning your analysis tasks. But it doesn't, you know, the more we think about these strange type of signatures, the more we cover the entire
sort of phase space. And I think there is a good reason for that. In fact, I think it is almost an overloop theorem, because we know that whatever we are looking for is heavy, and if it's heavy, it either gives a lot of visible energy or a lot of invisible energy. And that's a good thing, because that's basically the way we do the analysis and triggering. We're looking at the case of something well understood. That's a good thing.
I mean, we just learned yesterday that it makes sense to look for things in GeV dielectric resonance.
But those are not just 20 GeV dielectric resonances. There's 20 GeV dielectric resonance in the events which have hundreds of GeV of energy.
That's maybe not the best.
And yeah, the other thing is,
but for example, what Brian was talking about this morning, I mean, if you make something that mostly radiates invisibly and annihilates invisibly, except for some photons, that's really something that's on the radar screen. And for Higgs decays, they feel weird. If you don't have a lot of energy, you don't have a lot of this energy. So I agree with you. If you're talking about the higher energy stuff,
yeah,
we're pretty good
right.
There are low
no,
energy.
No, that's the first part of my conjecture. The second part of the conjecture is that the other thing we learned is that many of these phenomena, just again, because we talk about heavy things which are coupled by some heavy messenger fields, they tend to couple to heavy particles of third generation. And both collaborations spend a lot of time trying to build the triggers and the analysis based on these and talus. And that's covering rather significant different part of parameter space, including light peaks, by the way. Between these two ideas, go high in energy or missing energy and try to cover yourself with third generation particles, I think we are already covering very large fraction of interesting parameter space from the point of view of electric symmetry breaking. It doesn't mean that, you know, there might be some funny QCD-like phenomenon. We produce thousands of fines, 100 MeV each, and they don't even reach the calorimeter. And the only thing we could detect this is that our vertex detector would die a year before it should have died because of much higher radiation. Now, you know, this is, of course, fun to think about, but it doesn't explain at all anything we really know about TV physics. And I think we should at least concentrate on TV physics at this point, because that's very, you know, everything, all the radars are pointing. Okay, then maybe we'll miss this type of phenomenon at the beginning. I guess we can always try to get to it later on.
So can I interject? I mean, we have actually, I think now, a number of people who Henry Frisch wanted to also add some remarks on triggering, and I know there's high demand for that discussion, and so
Mariana wanted to.
So we want to do that. Okay, so we have. So let's. Should we transition into that? Let's do that.
Where'd he go? Getting coffee.
So, well, I sent a few slides with a summary of this paper to John, and then since he mentioned the result, I would like to explain briefly what is contained in this paper. It's a, well, there is one sector that is particularly interesting for any new physics, in particular for particles. It is the Higgs sector for several reasons. One is that the Higgs, well, of course, there is no reason for particles not to be coupled to the Higgs. So, if particles are coupled to the Higgs, there is an interface between both of them. On the one hand, when the Higgs acquires a vacuum expectation value, it will break conformal invariants, and also it will generate a tadpole for the unparticle operator, which means that the unparticle operator is going to acquire a Wagner expectation value in turn. And on the other hand, since the unparticle operator is going to acquire a Wagner expectation value, it's going to give a mass to the Higgs. It will play a role in the electrolysis breaking mechanism. So that's the... Okay, so I don't need to, of course, to introduce anything, just I'm going to fix a little bit the notation, but the main thing were covered by in the talks by Jonathan and John. So we will use this particular operator, which is coupling between this unparticle operator and the Higgs. So this is, well, the main interest of that is that this is a relevant operator. If the dimensionality of the unparticle operator is less than 2. So we are assuming all the time that the dimensionality, for various reasons, is between 1 and 2. And then this operator is relevant. So it can have an impact in the phenomenology and in everything. And this kappa parameter here is a dimensional parameter that is a function of the messenger masses and all that, but I'm not going to specify since it was written down in John's and Jonathan talks. So this is the starting point, right? This, the Lagrangian contains this interaction. Now, as I said, by the way, this interaction was proposed in this paper by Fox, Jaraman, and Schirman, as far as I know. So, what happened when this Higgs acquires a Wagner expectation value? Well, in that case, you see that in principle, this operator O has a tadpole, and something that has a tadpole means that it's not in its vacuum, so it will acquire a Wagner expectation value. So if you go to the well to the formalism, I haven't expanded the formalism here, for sure, but if you go to the formalism, then you can compute this Wagner expectation value, and it turns out that the Wagner expectation value is given by this expression. Yes, I wrote down this just to fix the notation, because I am using the Stefanov deconstructive theory, but in the continuum limit. So let's say that this operator in this language is just given by the integral from 0 to infinity of this dm squared times f m squared times u m squared. This u plays the role of a field, a space-time field